It's Veterans Day, a day meant to commemorate those who served in the United States military. Just in time for this holiday, the Army unveiled its first statue of a female soldier. The statue is in Fort Lee, Virginia, and it's the first statue of a woman commissioned and placed on a military base.
Later this month, the Senate will debate the annual defense authorization bill. The bill features an amendment from New York Democratic Senator Kristen Gillibrand that would remove the chain of command from the prosecution of major crimes, including sexual assault.
That's one of the issues that women in the armed services face. Right now, we look at the evolution of women's experience in the military.
I want to hear from you. Are you a woman in the military? What's it been like for you? Or are you the family member of a woman who served or a man who served alongside women in the military? Share your experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk at WPR.org.
Helen Benedict joins us now. She's a professor of journalism at Columbia University and the author of the book, The Lonely Soldier, The Private War of Women Serving in Iraq, also the Iraq War novel called Sand Queen. Helen, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much.
Well, you're credited with breaking the story about the epidemic of sexual assaults of women serving in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. How much has changed for women in the military since then?
Not a lot. There have been changes in the laws regarding what happens when they report, and there have been changes in supplying sexual assault counselors. So that's at least encouraging women to report more, and I think the new leap that was just reported this past week, the huge leap in numbers of sexual assaults reported, is at least partly due to more women being able to report than before, because traditionally it's been something like between 80% and 86% of assaults have not been reported. But the problem still exists, and it still exists in enormous and frightening numbers. It is still a occupational hazard for a woman in the military to deal with harassment and worse from many of her or some of her comrades, and that is alarming and shouldn't be.
Well, you've said in the past that women in the military are serving two wars. They're in a war against the normal dangers that one occurs with enemy combatants, and they're also serving a war against the people they're supposed to be able to trust. That's a devastating thing to say. Do you still think that's true?
Yes, I think it is. And I don't want to be too general here, and certainly don't want to sound as if I'm saying that all men in the military are treating women like objects of prey, because that's not true. But it's so common. I mean, the statistics are still something like 30% of women are sexually assaulted by comrades while serving. That's almost one in three. So it's a hostile work environment. And unlike the office, you can't go home. You have to live with the people who are treating you like this 24 hours a day for month after month after month. Often the people who are harassing or assaulting you are also above you in the chain of command, so they have complete control. As one of the soldiers told me, they control when I eat, when I sleep, when I work, when I don't work, when I can call home, when I can't call home. They have complete control over my life, and I'm supposed to do everything they tell me to do. So that's a much more dire circumstance than anybody faces in a civilian office.
In the intro, just a moment ago, we mentioned New York Democratic Senator Kristen Gillibrand's amendment to the defense authorization bill that would change the way sexual assault is prosecuted, take it out of the chain of command. Can you tell us more about that amendment and what you expect to happen?
Yes. I mean, what these studies have shown, studies done by the Defense Department itself, is that the way it's been traditionally and still is now, when you report an assault, it has to be reported to the commander of your unit. It has to go up the chain of command that you belong in, which means that if you wish to remain anonymous, firstly, that's almost impossible because these are small, gossipy organizations, platoons and units. And secondly, it's been found that very often the person you're reporting to either knows the accused or is the accused. So you can have this absurd situation of reporting your rape to the rapist. According to the documentary The Invisible War, that happens in 25% of the cases. So how can there be military justice when the person who's in charge of deciding whether to investigate and prosecute is trying to protect his own reputation or his own friends? What Gillibrand wants to do is take that decision completely out of the chain of command to an impartial body who won't have any investment in protecting themselves, so there won't be a conflict of interest.
Now, it's looking as though that could be a tough fight for that amendment, and it has some staunch opponents, opponents who say that you need the chain of command to make the military work. It's, the whole system is sort of predicated on people believing in the chain of command. What would you say to that?
Well, I would say that it hasn't worked. I mean, that's how it's been all this time, and there's this huge amount of evidence that only a small percentage of these cases get investigated, or let alone reach conviction, and that only a small percentage of those who are convicted actually get booted out of the military. So it hasn't worked. Also, a lot of our NATO allies have been using Gillibrand's method for a long time, including Canada, Britain, and several other countries. I mean, in Canada, they've been taking the investigations of sexual assaults out of the military for 20 years, and no generals are complaining there that it undermines their credibility. You have the way it works now is it makes a mockery of the term military justice. You can't have people investigating themselves when they're the criminals, or when they're friends with the criminals, or when they're invested in protecting the criminals. It's just glaringly irrational.
Now, you've spent a lot of your recent career talking to women veterans, talking to women who serve. What have they been telling you about their experience? What struck you?
The first woman I ever met, first woman veteran I ever met, I came up to her and I said, are you a veteran? And she was 21 years old and she said, yes, I've been just come back from Iraq. I was there for 11 months and I was a gunner. But when I talk about it, nobody believes me because I'm a female. And I said, well, I'll listen and I believe you were doing it. What happened? And she said, well, the first thing you have to understand is that if you're a girl in the military, the guys only let you be three things: a bitch, a whore, or a dyke. You're a bitch if you won't sleep with them, you're a whore if you've got one boyfriend, and you're a dyke if they don't like you, so you can't win. And I was so shocked at that I had to look around and find out whether this was just her or whether it was true. So I spent the next 3 years interviewing some 40 women who'd served in Iraq, and I also went deep into the databases of the Department of Veterans Affairs and found that they'd been studying sexual assault in the military since Vietnam, and that's where I found these terrifying statistics, over 30% statistics, and since then more and more has come out about it. And I still talk to women today who they bring up the bitch, dyke, whore line all the time. I mean, they say, oh, yes, that's exactly what it's like. That's exactly what it's like for too many of us. Again, not everybody, but too many. It shouldn't be like that for anyone.
We're talking right now with Helen Benedict. She's a professor of journalism at Columbia University, the author of The Lonely Soldier, The Private War of Women Serving in Iraq.
And we want to hear from you. If you're a woman who is serving or has served in the military, call and tell us your experience. Does it sound like what our guest is talking about? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or if you're a man in the service, have you served alongside women? What was that like? 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org.
This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
I'm Veronica Rickert. Our guest is Helen Benedict. She's a professor of journalism at Columbia University and the author of the book The Lonely Soldier, The Private War of Women Serving in Iraq. And we're taking your calls now.
You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your experiences, maybe as a woman serving in the U.S. military. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or a family member, a daughter, sister, mother who served in the U.S. military. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org.
Now, Helen, your book is called The Lonely Soldier, The Private War of Women Serving in Iraq. Why is the war private for them?
That refers to the fact that so many women have felt that they can't tell anybody about harassment and rape if that's what's happening to them. The culture in the military for everyone is to not complain, especially not to complain about each other. You're seen as a traitor, as letting the side down. And when it comes to sexual assault, it's also a victim-blaming culture, as is our world in civilian life. You must have brought it on yourself by being careless or being flirtatious or drinking too much or being a weak soldier for failing to defend yourself and protect yourself. So the message everywhere is to keep quiet. And I asked women, you know, how they felt, if they felt safe, or rather nobody feels safe in war, I'll take that back, but I mean, if they felt they could trust their comrades to watch their backs in battles, if they were in one of those platoons where they were being constantly harassed or even attacked, how can you trust your comrades to keep you safe? And they said, we can't, we feel alone. So I kept hearing that phrase about being alone, which is why I called it the lonely soldier. And the silence is why I used the word private.
Now, we just heard the story this morning that there is the first statue of a woman soldier. She's dressed in her army fatigues, and she's carrying an M4 rifle, I think it is, in the statue in Virginia on a military base. Do you think that, you know, maybe this and that there are other signs that the military is in good faith and wanting to improve things for women going forward?
I think the statue is a great step forward. All the other statues of women have shown them as nurses or that kind of role rather than as fighters. And women have been on the front lines since the beginning of the Afghanistan war, because there are no front lines in wars like this. Women get drawn into being gunners and even raiding houses because they're working alongside the infantry, often in combat support. And, you know, bombs and attacks don't choose who's supposedly an infantry person and who isn't. So long before the combat ban was lifted, women were really fighting in this. And yet, that because of the ban and because of the traditionally misogynist attitude that's gone on for generations and generations, women were very much second-class citizens in the military. And I think a statue like this recognizes them as equals and shows respect for them. And that is the most important step towards treating them equally in every other way.
Now, given all the women that you've spoken to and the problems that you just described, what do they say and what do you think needs to happen in the military to make things safe and supportive and to create the kind of environment where women can really contribute and feel like they're giving their whole selves and being respected in the military?
Well, fairness of promotion, banning the language that's often used by drill sergeants and among soldiers in general or any of the branches, which is there's an awful lot of derogatory language about women that's just used in casual talk or that drill sergeants, drill instructors will use to dress down their soldiers. They'll even scream, "What are you, girls?" and other more vulgar words as if just being female is somehow is demeaning you. So there has to be more respect throughout and it has to be genuine. But there really has to be consequences, too, to when there is wrongdoing. You know, and that's what this new bill is addressing, and that's what Congress is trying to address. The defensiveness has to end, the self-protectiveness of the old guard against which has been stalling about changes when it comes to treating women and ending discrimination against women in all kinds of ways, not only in terms of sexual violence. I mean, it should be, I would love us too, even the media, to pay more attention to what women have achieved as well as not only talking about them as victims, because of course they're not. I mean, I have met so many women who have saved lives and have worked very hard to help the civilians of Iraq or Afghanistan, even if they are at the same time being harassed or even assaulted, that it's doubly heroic. And those who've had the courage to speak out as well are triply heroic. It's very hard to speak out from an organization like the military. But when you use the word respect, that is the most important key our women are equal in every way, and it's time to face that, both in the military and in our civilian life at large.
Well, Helen, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking to Helen Benedict, professor of journalism at Columbia and the author of The Lonely Soldier, The Private War of Women Serving in Iraq.
Coming up next, we're talking about The Book of Men. It's a collection of 80 stories trying to answer the question, what does it mean to be a man?
This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.